Hello and welcome to Real World HR, the podcast putting the human back into HR. I'm Louise Kennedy, a HR expert, chartered CIPD professional and founder of award-winning HR consultancy Oculus HR. In the Real World HR podcast, we focus on people and business, telling the stories that we've learned from and explaining the processes which have supported the solutions. In this episode, I'm joined by Claire Libby, certified health coach and the director and founder of I Am Me, the community interest company that supports mental health and well-being of young people. I Am Me is a free app which supplies resources, including tools, tips and insights, which enables teenagers and young adults to understand what it takes to become active participants in their own mental health and well-being journey. Claire is also a director at Linac Learning, a consultancy specialising in learning development, supporting from entry-level apprentices through to board-level executives. Claire leads the early learning development programmes, supporting the transitions of young people from education into business, ensuring that they're set up to thrive and that they become part of a robust talent pipeline. Are you ready to step into the real world of HR? Thank you so much for agreeing to join us today, Claire. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. I think kind of the two areas that you're involved in are certainly hot topic areas for different reasons with regard to what we do at Oculus HR as well. So do you want to just kind of, as a bit of a starting point, just introduce yourself? Obviously, I've done a little intro for you, but introduce yourself, give us a little bit more detail and just explain kind of what your interests are around both of those areas that you're involved in.
Yeah, thank you ever so much. It's lovely to be here with you. I'm not sure what I can add to that because you did it so so beautifully. I guess first and foremost, I am a mum of two. I've got two boys, one 21, one 17 now. So I've obviously got an insight into what it is to be a young person growing up in today's world. As you said, I'm a certified health coach. My career as well has also been in the early career space supporting young people for pretty much the last 14 years. I've always had a personal fascination with mental health and well-being. And I guess the path that I've taken has just really sort of led me down working more closely with young people to see what I as an individual and the offerings I've got through my company and my different roles, and also what the clients that I work with, what they can do to sort of support young people as well. So yeah, I think that's probably what I'd add to what you so beautifully put.
So from the point of view of kind of deciding to work with young people, was there something that kind of brought you to that point of deciding that you want to work with young people? Obviously, you had young children at that point, but probably not ones that you were thinking around from a mental health point of view or kind of career-wise point of view. So was there a kind of another area that made you think, I want to move into that particular band of people?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think it was just sort of an outcome of circumstances, really. I went back to work when my boys were at an age where I felt that it was time and I was ready to go back to work. And I happened to join an organisation that was looking at the employability skills of young people at the time. So immediately I went into supporting young people. Prior to that, and prior to having children, I kind of graduated with an HR degree and I worked more kind of in HR recruitment, never really thinking that I would sort of focus predominantly on young people. But the job that I took on after my kids were a little bit older, it really got me thinking about the different challenges that young people face and how different today's world is compared to the world that I grew up in. And as that work kind of evolved and shifted a little bit, and my focus became more on actually going into schools and colleges and universities and working directly with those young people, I guess I started to see that the way they kind of viewed themselves was changing. Up until then, I guess for me personally, I'd never really thought about mental health. It's kind of always been in my home life. I grew up with an alcohol dependent parent. Depression and attempted suicide, sadly, were part of my childhood. So I've always been aware of it from that perspective, but I've never really kind of focused on it or given it a word. And then the young people that I was supporting, they just started to struggle. Young people that always had such high levels of confidence and self-belief, you know, the cracks were starting to appear for them and they started to feel like they didn't really understand their place in the world. They started to get really overwhelmed by things that would normally, you know, wouldn't bother them. So that's where I guess my real interest started to peak in terms of what more could we, should we be doing mm-hmm. to support these young people? And also, why is this happening now? What's changed?
So that came from you were doing the consultancy part of it with Linac and then you kind of set up the I Am Me, is that right? Did you do it is that the way that's kind of worked together?
Yeah, so I joined Lionac Learning, I think it was probably 7 or 8 years ago. And in the back of my mind, the whole concept of IME was kind of tinkering away and gathering momentum in my own mind. I knew that I wanted to do something, but I wasn't quite sure what that looked like. So I enlisted the help of young people, because who's better placed to tell us what support they need. So I ran a number of focus groups that involved young people that were either in education, who had been kicked out of mainstream education and were in alternative provision environments, young people that were thriving, young people that were really struggling, had attempted self-harm, that had developed disordered eating, worked closely with academics, with people that were working directly counselling young people, and also young people that were thriving. You know, I really wanted to get a full spectrum of insights from them. And they basically said that they felt that the biggest challenge happened when they moved from primary school to secondary school.
Right.
It was too much for some people. They'd gone from what was often quite a nurturing small environment into quite a big pond. And they were struggling to understand where they fit into that, you know, sort of issues with understanding their own identity, you know, comparisons between other people, what they were achieving academically, what they looked like. And they said that the support they had, whilst they appreciate it was, you know, they had their interests at heart, it tended to be from teachers who were obviously in school that potentially did a bit of counselling or support work as well, but they had to go and wait outside their office. And if you waited outside their office, everyone knew what you were waiting outside the office for, so they didn't tend to bother. They were adamant that they didn't want it to be some kind of self-help book, because they didn't want anyone to find what they were reading, or, you know, it's not like they could sit on the bus with their self-help book out and, you know, not get any stick from it, really. So I talked to them about the work I was doing with Lionac Learning, which was a lot of development programs, helping young people to understand themselves a bit better, helping them to manage the different relationships that they have, manage stress in their life, and really kind of setting them up to thrive during what can be sometimes challenging times when they enter work. And they said, yeah, you know, basically we'll have a bit of that. Can we have that? And they wanted it in an app form. So that became the basis of the offering of IME. An app that was created to help young people connect with themselves, understand themselves better, and then connect with the world around them and seek support, additional support if they feel they need it, but ultimately understand themselves a bit better.
Yeah. And you've said that was a free app as well that people can use?
Yeah, so it's free. I always maintained that it had to be free. A lot of people say, you know, you should monetize these sorts of things. But I think a lot of the stuff that's on offer around well-being, and it's a completely confusing place to navigate. It's something like 58 million hashtags on Instagram relating to well-being. And there's new research coming out all the time. You know, if, depending on who you follow, you'll be told to do one thing versus another. So I wanted it to be free so that anyone could have access to it. Pretty much every kid has a phone these days. They tend to have phones around the age of sort of 12, 13, because that's when they go to secondary school and their parents quite rightly want to kind of make sure they're safe and keep in contact with them. So yeah, by having it as something that's free, it means that anyone, regardless of their start in life, regardless of, you know, kind of their finances, their financial situation, can access information that comes from qualified professionals to help guide them a little bit better.
And what does the app itself do then? So obviously it kind of lets people look on there and kind of address about themselves, and I'm assuming to do kind of a little bit of analysis on themselves. Do you want to just explain a little bit about what the app does and how it can benefit and help?
Sure. I think most importantly, it helps people become part of their own well-being journey. It helps people to understand themselves a little bit better. So the main hub of the app is lots of different articles, and the articles all fall under 6 key pillars, which in the medical profession are known as lifestyle medicine. So they're things that we all have, I guess, a say in terms of the choices that we make in life. So things relating to kind of nutrition, sleep, movement, relationships, our sense of headspace, and the way that we manage challenging times. So the way that we deal with stress. So any young person can go on there and type in a word such as stress, depression, anxiety, and it will come up with a whole host of articles that will then take them on a bit of a journey to help them understand why something like that might be happening to them, to help them gain a bit of perspective. Because I think sometimes, you know, lifestyle choices around use of tech, the food that we're eating, the quality of the sleep that we're getting, that can drive a person's anxiety. So just really small tweaks in each of those areas can help someone feel calmer. but equally it could be something that they need to seek, you know, medical support for. So it helps them to understand kind of where they're at. It gives them tips in terms of things that they can try themselves first and foremost, because I really do believe that that's where the empowerment comes from. If a young person can, you know, try something and notice a difference, that, you know, a positive impact that something's having, then they can then make informed choices about whether they want to make that choice in the future or whether they want to, you know, stick with something that's not going to support them. And also it guides them towards leading, I guess, a type of lifestyle that's going to support a greater sense of well-being. So it helps them understand, you know, the impact of not taking care of your own sleep quality, the impact of eating certain types of foods, the impact of, you know, sort of that overwhelm that can occur, and also the impact of not really understanding yourself, what's important to you, you know, what you enjoy, what you don't enjoy, what your values are. Because I think young people are so impressionable that they can kind of be taken down a path of what their mates are into, or, you know, what someone on social media says they should be into. And then they go into the world of work and there's this massive disconnect because they're not being true to themselves. They're following a path that someone's told them they should follow. And that's kind of when they run into difficulties as well. So yeah, the app's there to dip in and out of, you know, on a daily basis. It's got stress trackers. It's got a questionnaire that helps them to understand how they're feeling. Because one of the bits of feedback from the young people that I surveyed and did the focus groups with was around how they knew something was wrong. They plucked up the courage to go to their doctors. And then they were told that they had to wait 3-6 months until they could actually see someone and get some support. And for one particular young lady, her self-harm went through the roof at that point because she just felt like she'd been completely let down. And she was guided towards the app, which she said helped as a kind of buffer to see her through that period and to support herself until that support was there. So it can be used in lots of different ways.
Yeah. But as you say, that example there is a perfect example of, you know, being unable to be able to get that support in the right amount of time that you needed it. And actually that could have had completely different consequences for the lag of time, really, isn't it? So at least your app sounds like it's the opportunity for people to be able to reach out and do other things. And as you say, kind of supposed to take a little bit care of their own well-being and kind of their accountability for themselves as well within there. Is there a particular age range that you think it's particularly applicable for or from and to?
Yeah, I think when I first kind of started out in terms of wanting to create something, it was very much about focusing on young people and it was really about prevention. You know, having family members that have struggled with their own mental health. And by all standards, I am not perfect. But the biggest thing that stands out for me is the choices around lifestyle. So it was really around educating people about things they could do to prevent themselves from getting to a point where they were really struggling. And I felt that I really wanted to help those young people as they transitioned into secondary school. But since launching it in 2019, my work's kind of taken me down lots of different paths supporting all different ages, because the advice is the same, whether you know you're kind of nearly 50 or whether you are 13 years old, you know, the things that we know support mental health and well-being, it doesn't change. So yeah, whilst it is very much my passion is supporting young people, the content on the app is relevant for anyone at any stage of life.
Yeah, and I think that's the important bit, isn't it? You know, that people realise, and obviously there's plenty of things that are out there, but for young people to realise there's something in particular that they can go to and it's tailored towards them as well. So I think that's particularly useful. And you talk about that transition, obviously, from the primary to the secondary. And then I think by all accounts, from kind of looking over your information there, you obviously are very much involved with that transition from kind of coming out of school or college system to go into the work environment. That's obviously a significant change for people that need to really, they need to help and understand that transition into that different environment. Because it's a whole new ball game, isn't it, when they're going into the work environment?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's that, you know, sometimes young people become really unstuck during that phase. I think one of the biggest difficulties that they face is that, you know, predominantly the types of organisations I work with, you know, they're big companies and they have really fantastic early careers teams that really want these young people to join the business and really thrive. But sometimes they're not kind of put in the environments where they have an opportunity to thrive because, you know, potentially they could be with a manager that is very different to them in terms of their interests, you know, their age. And they do start to feel that kind of sense of isolation. So having that sense of community, being part of a particular cohort is absolutely critical for that. as part of the work I do, it's not only the app, but it's kind of workshops for young people during that phase and also one-to-one coaching. So I know, especially from the coaching work that I do, where obviously we're having really open and honest conversations, some of them have been shining under the academic spotlight whilst they've been at school. And they've, you know, quite happily admitted that they've been able to hide under that because it's always been about academics. It's always been about the results. And they've never really had to think about the other bits that make them a human being, you know, their ability to have conversations with people, their levels of confidence, their self-belief, because it's always been about the grades. And then suddenly they're thrown into, you know, a cohort with lots of other people who it hasn't been about the grades for, and it has been around all those different facets that they need to demonstrate when they go into work, and they feel out of their depth suddenly, and they feel like they don't belong, and they feel anxious and nervous because they feel like they're not as good as all the others. So I think it's really important at that stage, especially to help those young people really understand themselves more and build that confidence and that self-belief so that when they go into work, they are set up to flourish and they don't flop, you know, in the early stages.
And do you do that in conjunction with employers that are wanting to invest in young people and thrive? And I suppose it's with the employers, or do you have opportunities that kind of go with schools? Because, well, I've got two boys as well, and they're kind of 19 and nearly 16, kind of doing, the youngest one's doing his GCSEs at the minute. But I think there is a massive disconnect with the idea of being able to be out of work, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in the school system, aren't you? Then all of a sudden you go into work and the expectations that come with it. And I think certainly, obviously from a HR perspective, I've certainly seen the expectations of young people be different, you know. So when I was young and, you know, went into a job, I'd be very much like, yes, if that's what you want me to do, I'd do it, you know. Where I don't think that's very, well, that's certainly not what we experience with our clients, that people do challenge back more. And I think it is the understanding of the working environment that actually they think that they can do what they want and say what they want and react and behave as they want, where actually there needs to be some kind of structure around how they behave within the workplace as well. And I think there is that disconnect that they don't really understand that part of it, because to be fair, nobody's ever told them, have they?
100%. And I see that so much. And I think sometimes employers, you know, they want to attract the best talent. So they go into, you know, in a really competitive market, trying to get the cream of the crop into their business, roll out the red carpet. You know, it's all kind of all singing, all dancing, come and work with us. This is what we do. But then, you know, I guess it's a bit like a new relationship. In the early days, it's really exciting. You can't wait to kind of get there and, you know, sort of meet up with everyone, excited about, you know, where it could take you. And then reality kicks in and it's kind of like every day, some days it's not going to be particularly exciting. And I think that employers need to be really careful about that all singing, all dancing red carpet that they put out. And I think the more authentic they can be in terms of not every day is going to be exciting. You know, some days you're going to have to work on stuff that you might not see the point of, but it's part of our bigger picture, it's part of our plan, part of our global strategy, and we've all got to roll our sleeves up and get on with it. And the likelihood of you making managing director by, you know, year and a half is probably pretty slim, but we'll support you and we'll help you succeed as much as we can, but you've got to come to the table as well. And I think that communication is key in order to manage those expectations. And also, I guess, a little bit around respect and workplace etiquette. You know, there are people that are often in businesses that may not be qualified from an academic perspective, but they've got a huge amount of experience up their sleeves. And it's really important that young people, I feel, are encouraged to network in the business and really get to know those types of people, because that's, you know, they need role models. They need role models that obviously understand the business, but equally role models that are going to show them that actually you do have to take care of yourself. It's not enough to just pitch up at work in a physical sense. You know, you've got to be there 100% wholeheartedly, and you need to flourish. And in order to do that, you've got to take care of yourself, because otherwise you're just going to burn out.
And it is sometimes it is the basics, isn't it? You know, dressing the right way, turning up on time. We had one a few weeks ago where someone had been told to put a letter in the post. So they put the document in the envelope and then just put the envelope in the post tray, but didn't address it to anyone or put a stamp or anything on it. And when asked, they said, well, you never said I needed to write on the envelope. Like, no, actually, we didn't.
No. That's just a really good that. Point. Yeah.
But it's sometimes it's the basics, isn't it, that actually, you know, you do need to be there. And then the open communication that you have with them in there. And again, we see people taking on young people, apprentice type level sometimes, and they don't use them in the right way. You know, they're not using them to flourish. They're not using them to kind of engage with the business. They're using them as a bit of a spare pair of hands. Like, they think, well, actually, it's just a bit of a cheaper way to do things. And actually, you know, it's awful to be able to say that, because people aren't getting the right opportunities that are there when you're in a business where you can flourish and where you've got the opportunity to be able to grow as a young person, because that's the only way you're ever gonna learn, isn't it? And it's sometimes our first role can just be about learning the basics, can't you? You know, as I say, turn up from work on time, looking as you should do, and presenting yourself as you need to be able to do the role that it is that you're employed to be able to do. So I think there's a massive element of that, and I think it can be so difficult, as I say, with my oldest son, trying to find just even work, you know, kind of bar work while he's at uni and things like that. It's difficult to get into, isn't it? And kind of that understanding of what's okay. When he comes home sometimes and says, oh, I've said that. And I'm like, oh, really? Every six
yeah,
time,
it
don't.
Is difficult. Yeah, absolutely. It is difficult. And I think for some, the kind of the role of social media, and, you know, I'm not here as a doom goblin for tech and social media, but, you know, it has fantastically helped people to be really digitally connected, you know, and get things at the touch of a button. But that in itself is a good thing, but it's also a bad thing, because, you know, that expectation that you're going to be a multimillionaire from doing stuff on YouTube, that's out there now. And so, you know, when you talk about kind of minimum wage or salaries of a certain bracket, young people do kind of turn their nose up a little bit, because they think, well, that's nothing. So-and-so on, you know, Instagram's earning whatever. So I think there is, you know, they are dealing with a different landscape. That wasn't an option when I was young. So I had to just get on with it, and I got what I was paid, and I didn't really think about it. I was just grateful to have a job at the time. But I think equally, the work that I do is helping those managers of young people. So you typically, as you know, you have your early careers team that tend to be the ones that support those apprentices, grads, you know, whoever comes in, interns, work experience. And then you've got the managers. So when they've gone through that bit of development that they get from early careers, they're then free into the business and they report into a manager, and helping them understand different things like different colour energies that people might have, the way they communicate, their communication preferences. Because otherwise you get a young person that might be, you know, sort of quite timid and shy, and they've got a manager who's kind of operates on a red, you know, sort of fiery, to the point, blunt, and they take it really personally. They think, well, this manager hates me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they quite often think, oh, I just better leave because it's just not working. So I think supporting those managers to help them set those young people up is really important. But equally, educating those young people about all the different facets of business really early on, so that there aren't any surprises for them, really, in terms of that sort of stuff. It's kind of basics for them.
And I just think your point that you're making there around the manager point of view, I think, so we do emotional intelligence assessments and with some training as well with companies, but with managers in particular, because there's still so many people that don't know how they react and how they respond, and that intent versus impact, and kind of the how it plays out and their expectation of how they deliver something and what's delivered back from them. So we do quite a bit of work around that, just because actually, you know, as you say, you've got somebody maybe coming in at a younger age and not really understanding the ways of work, and they come across somebody who's just kind of, you know, bang, 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 and not really tailoring the message and the communication to the right people. So we find that as quite a useful tool from a, you know, people managing young people point of view. It's a really useful tool that we can use and bring into businesses, just to raise people's awareness. I mean, you know, you know yourself, obviously, with the experience that you've got, you do come across people and think they've just got absolutely no emotional intelligence at all. They don't know the impact that they're making on people or how they're going to react to certain situations. So I think that's all really relevant within this as well, isn't it? Because it's not just about the young person, but it's about how to manage that young person and knowing yourself well enough to be able to know what skills that you've got to enable that management to take place.
100%. Yeah, I think it's always interesting. So as I said at the start, that, you know, my passion is very much around young people, but I've started to work more closely with slightly more seasoned employees, should we say. And recently I was with a group of operations managers, so senior people, and they work in the food and beverages industry. And they didn't want to be with us. They didn't want to be developed. You know, they've all got a huge amount of experience, and quite rightly thought, who are we to kind of educate them and support them? Because, you know, some of them were sort of nearing retirement age. But really quickly, they start to see that actually they don't know everything. And certainly when it comes to well-being, there was a huge number of light bulb moments, them actually understanding how their well-being was impacting their ability as a leader and their ability to sort of be productive. And I think when people make that connection, it's really key, because then they can become those shining examples to whoever their team members are, whether they're young, you know, sort of middle-aged or whoever. And I think it's really important that companies think about the wider culture that they're creating. It's not just about these young people, because they will join with a set of beliefs that have been molded by the world that they've grown up in and their managers and their early career support. It's about that kind of ripple effect that runs through a business, making sure that actually they're not kind of running a well-being workshop and then, you know, promoting a culture that's work hard, play hard, and everyone's got to stay there until midnight and sort of stress is rewarded. I think it's really important that they think really carefully about top down what's happening, you know, who are those leaders and how are they representing the kind of culture that they really want.
Yeah, and I think that's such an interesting point, isn't it? Because a larger company can think, right, okay, we'll bring however many apprentices in this year, or, you know, people at a younger level, but actually it needs to fit within the organisation. People need to be able to manage the situation as well, isn't it? Because it's not just, you know, being seen to bring 30 apprentices in this year, but it's about how that makes the longer term impact and whether people have got the ability to be able to manage the people that are actually brought in. So I think some real valid points that go into there as well. So from a point of view of business leaders, obviously we're just talking about how business leaders can bring people into the business. What do you think would be a good way to transition younger people into the workforce?
I think it's funny because I posted something on LinkedIn today. I was asked to write an article for the Institute of Student Employers around this sort of topic, more sort of based on well-being, so supporting the well-being of those young people. I think, as I mentioned earlier, they have to be authentic and they have to be realistic about the kinds of work that these young people are doing. I've had too many one-to-one conversations with the young people I coach about there being a disconnect between what they thought they'd be doing and the reality of what they are doing. And also kind of what their salary expectations are versus what the company is able and willing to pay them as well. So I think they need to be really transparent. For me and some of the companies that I work with, when they go into schools and they do their, or unis, colleges, they do their outreach, they are already promoting and helping to signpost young people towards resources like the app to help them understand how they can take care of their mental health and well-being. Because if they're not in a good place, then they can't possibly be expected to turn up at work and you know, do a really good job. And quite often, I think sometimes where managers see young people, you know, coming up against challenges, it's not because they're not capable of doing it. It's quite often something that's going on in their personal life that is preventing them from doing that. And if you think about kind of the lifestyle medicine, you know, sort of analogy in terms of looking after stress, sleep and all those bits and pieces, if one of those goes out of kilter, they all go out of kilter. You know, if someone is stressed at work, that impacts their relationships at work, but also impacts their relationships at home. You know, if someone is kind of not sleeping particularly well, then that's going to influence how they turn up at work in terms of their energy levels, their focus, their productivity. But also it's not going to make them particularly nice to be around because they're tired and grumpy, and they're going to gravitate towards nutrition that just gives them that sugar fix, which isn't going to support them in the long term. So they're all massively connected. So I think the more employers can do to educate people about the different things that they need to do to take care of themselves, the more likely they are to flourish and thrive when they get into the workplace in the first place. I think without that, you know, I've seen it all too often with young people. They've got some really fantastic habits that really support their well-being. Obviously, when you're in education, you've got a bit more time to do those sorts of things. And then you go into work and the reality hits that actually every day you've got to be up at a certain time, you've got to go to work, and they are exhausted. So all the things that help balance their brain chemistry go out the window as they kind of adjust to this new way of life. And then before you know it, they're having to take time out of work because they're too stressed and overwhelmed to kind of deal with it. So I think making sure that people have that time, they're encouraging people to step away from their desk, they're encouraging people to take proper breaks, and they're encouraging people to be active and really sort of, I guess, reinforcing the messages around well-being. And as I said, you know, lead by example. You can't expect people to thrive if you're not thriving yourself. So I think those are the things that I would say, just that education piece, it's absolutely critical.
Mm-hmm. And I think the lead by example is a great, whether it be well-being or whether it be kind of example setting or expectations. I think that fits across the board of all of what you've just said there, doesn't it? I think it's being able to take that lead there as well. What would be your biggest piece of advice to the listeners to help young people excel in their careers?
I think it would be a few things. I think making sure that they are connected with people that are of a similar age to them. I see, you know, big companies that take on particularly apprentices, I think they tend to be sort of put into businesses a bit more rather than being more of a cohort. For some reason, certainly the companies that I work with, the grads seem to have that sense of cohort, but the apprentices, they come together very rarely and then they're put into different parts of the business and they've got a bit of a sense of isolation. They feel kind of cut off and alone. So I would make sure that they are set up with some kind of network, you know, people of similar ages, whether that be apprentices from previous years, apprentices on different sites, and they follow a program which gets them all together. So they got that sense of belonging. I think that's really, really key. As I said, that managing expectations, being really honest about what they can expect from you and what you expect from them. So that kind of rules out any issues with workplace etiquette, communication, punctuality. You know, I think starting off on that foot and being really clear is absolutely key. And also helping them to understand where they fit into the bigger picture of the business. I think sometimes where young people maybe lose hope or start to sort of look at other jobs is because they don't really see the relevancy of what they're doing in terms of the company's strategic goals and where it's going. And the work that I do with young people in terms of their one-to-one coaching, I always encourage them to go out and network as much as they can within their business and set them targets. If I want you to have found two people by the time we have our next call, I want you to understand how their job impacts your job, how your job impacts their job, and how you're both contributing towards the overarching goals of the business. Because I think if you can get them really bought in to that, then they're going to see their place, they're going to feel valued. When those not so great, exciting jobs come along, it's going to be less of an issue for them because they know they're working towards something that is much bigger. So I think those are the things that really jump out for me.
Yeah, and I think they're all really valid points, aren't they? You know, as you kind of go through them, I think they're, and I think connecting people of a similar age, I think it's something that I think is really important, you know, as you say, from like that apprenticeship group. And, you know, so I think there's so many valid points that you've just come through with there. What can listeners find out, or where can listeners find out more about you?
So I would say the best place would be certainly the work that I'm doing would be LinkedIn. So I'm pretty active on there, not massively active, but that's where you'll kind of hear about the stuff that I'm doing. Also for the community interest company, I Am Me, the website is iamme.app.com, and also on Instagram, I Am Me Global Limited. So we post a few things on there about the stuff that we're doing as well. Those would be the three main places.
Fantastic. So thank you very much for coming along today to speak to us. And thank you to our listeners for listening to the Real World HR podcast today. So it's really appreciate that you've given me your time. And I think two very, very important areas, especially touches home when you've got children of a similar age, that you're kind of making the relevance around there as well. But then obviously the interest from the work side of things as well. You can find more information about what we discussed in this episode in the show notes. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes, and please leave us a rating and a review. Real World HR, putting the human back into HR. HR is so instrumental in shaping, reinforcing and changing an organisation's culture. Take our HR health check quiz to assess the efficiency of your HR operations and uncover areas for improvement. Head down to the show notes for the link.